Hi, everybody. My name's Reed. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Reed.
So my sobriety date is March 5th, 2010. I have a sponsor, and I am a sponsor, and my home group is the Buford Road Group. We meet in Southside Richmond, south of Richmond, every Wednesday at 7 o'clock. So I know some of you guys have been there and look familiar, and Sam was actually just our hotshot speaker for our anniversary a couple weeks ago, and he was joking when he got up there that he was going to ask some people to come up, and I thought he was joking, but nope, here I am. I was talking to Billy and Sam a little before the meeting, too. This part of the state's real close to my heart. My mom grew up in Orange, and I would come and stay weeks with my grandma and stuff. And my grandfather actually got sober in AA sometime in the early 80s. We're not real sure about timeline and stuff, but he was a real private man. But it's just cool to be up here, because I can remember going to Yoder's when I was a kid, although the Yoder's I passed didn't look like the one. There's a lot of alcoholism in my family. Above that grandparent generation, three out of four of my grandparents had definite signs of it. Only one got sober. My other grandfather, I can remember watching him die in the VA hospital in Richmond from alcohol, those symptoms, and the things that it does to us. I don't like to think about alcoholism too much, though. I try to be just an action type guy, but you can't kind of overlook that sort of thing. There's a lot of history there, and I was warned a lot as a kid that it could possibly happen to me, but I didn't listen. So grew up, my parents are still married. They're very loving. A common theme in my story is that they just kept loving me despite my actions. I'm very, very lucky to have had parents and still have parents like them, because who knows where I'd be without them. We grew up kind of out in the outskirts of the Richmond area, kind of a rural area. I think the closest neighbor was like a half mile down the road. Bunch of trees. The river was a half mile down the road, too, so I did a lot of fishing, and I'm an only child as well, so I can remember a lot of loneliness and trying to entertain myself. I quickly turned into the class clown and got into a lot of trouble in school. I ended up, I think, seventh grade, got into like 10 fights in the first few months of school. And parents jerked me out and sent me to private school, a Catholic school down in the city. And that was my first, it's when I really felt different, I can remember. I would always try, I did have those personality traits before, but I can really remember just being, I don't know, who I am. I was the big kid from out in the country, and all these kids had been together their whole lives. So there was like 10 people in seventh grade. That was the first time I got drunk. I remember I was invited to a sleepover at this guy's house, and somebody had snuck a mason jar of tequila into the place, and we were standing in this basement, and I drank most of it, and actually things turned out pretty well. I didn't get in trouble, had a great time, but I will always remember the effect that it had on me. I felt, obviously these kids liked me, they wouldn't have invited me to this party, but I finally felt like I belonged. It's a cliche here, but it's true. It about the same time, I will tell y'all that drugs are a pretty big part of my story, but they were really just kind of a means to an end for me. They made drinking easier. They made it a little bit better, but alcohol was the alpha and the omega for me, you know. It's where it started, that's where it ended. So, you know, I started doing some other things about that time too, 12, 13. It was a lot easier to find at that time too. But, you know, I still lived out in the country, so I was kind of cut off from my friends. And you know, I ended up matriculating to the Catholic high school. It's an all-boys Catholic military school, so very strict. I was able to kind of figure out how to get away with things there, too. Did pretty well, but about that, I don't know, 10th grade or so, I started smoking pot every day. All of a sudden, surprisingly enough, I started getting straight A's at that point. I don't know what it is about that, but it helped me focus or something. I don't know. But so I was able to get into, I got accepted to some pretty good colleges. I was also a baseball player. I turned down a scholarship, actually, to a smaller in-state school to go to the University of Tennessee and try and walk on. And that was my first real taste of freedom. About a month into my freshman year, I got a bottle of 100-proof Wild Turkey, Southern Comfort. And we were over the dorm room, or the dorm building that I was in. One side was guys, the other side was girls, and we were over drinking in the girls' side. I blacked out, was told later that somehow I fell over and smashed this girl's desk, and then got mad and tried to fight somebody, and they just shoved me out into the hallway. So I'm wandering around the girl's side of the dorm, and eventually, I don't know how long, I guess it was banging on doors and stuff, and a cop taps me on the shoulder right by the elevator, and I throw my weed out on the ground right in front of him to try and run, and he grabs me, puts one handcuff on me, and I elbowed him in the mouth. Luckily, I only got charged with drunk in public. There's a lot of things I could have gotten charged with in that situation, but that was my first run-in with the law. I have spent time in the drunk tank in every town that I've lived in my life, every county at least. So that was Knox County, Tennessee. and then, you know, that was my first kind of scare. I stayed sober for a few weeks. That's about it. Was still doing the other stuff, and just worked out that, you know, I couldn't live without going to the parties. I mean, we won the national championship in football that year, so I can't be expected not to party. So I ended up failing out, and the first time my parents let me back into their house after screwing up, I was going to school for civil engineering, and I ended up scoring a pretty good position with a local engineering firm in Richmond, doing geotech work. I was traveling from Maryland to Georgia, living in hotel rooms and stuff. And, you know, I didn't really have the means. I was like 19 at that point, so I couldn't really buy booze. I managed to stay pretty straight for a couple years. And then I, 2 weeks after I turned 21, I decided I was going to move to Colorado. Some buddies of mine from high school had moved out there right after they graduated, so I went and joined them and lived in Steamboat Springs, the little ski resort town. And, you know, I had that freedom again. I was, you know, my parents were pretty strict, so, you know, it seems like every time I got out from under their thumb, I would just go crazy. But, And I did all right for a while there. I lived there from 2001 until 2005, 4 years. First 2 years were real good. I would cook in the summertime and drive taxi in the wintertime. Made real good money doing that, and got introduced to some other substances that really help you drink a long time, stay up late, that sort of thing. And I ended up homeless about 2.5 years into living there. Just burned a bunch of bridges, quit paying bills, that sort of thing. And I would couch surf for the most part. Sometimes I couldn't find a place, so I'd sleep outside. I was always like to camp, so I just figured I was camping. I would actively try and get drunk in public if I knew it was going to be down in the, you know, zeros, though, so I could sleep inside. I think I got eight to ten drunk in publics when I was living there, some intentional, some not. But eventually I just had enough of trying to do that, and came crawling back to the parents again. I was 25 this time. I was lucky enough to get a position with that engineering firm again. This time I was a little wiser, I guess, or I don't know. I'd manipulated it so I didn't have to travel as much. You know, I stayed in Virginia, but I was had to work this job out in Lebanon, Virginia, if y'all know where that is. It's way out in the point, like by Tennessee and Kentucky. And there's not much drinking going on out there, I guess. There was one bar in town. It was the Applebee's. And I got tired of drinking there one night, so I decided I'd drive up to West Virginia to a strip club. And I'm in the company truck. So somewhere, I think Tazewell or somewhere, I pulled over to use the restroom and ended up bumping a car. And instead of stopping and apologizing, all that sort of thing, I just took off. And sure enough, get a call the next day. I got fired. So I've also always had really good luck. I ended up being out of work for like a week and found a position managing a soils lab, doing the exact same thing I was doing before for this other company. And at this point, you know, I've always been kind of a binge drinker, or that's kind of when I started the binges, I guess. At this point, I would get, you know, real drunk every weekend, but it was not really anything that affected, you know, well, besides the stuff in Colorado. That was in the past. I kind of learned my lesson, but, I thought I'd kind of gotten that under control. But I started to drink more and more, and it was really affecting my personality. I was in a management position, and you know, I talked to these people like they were scum, you know, like the, it basically affected everything in my my life. Started to not pay bills again. I actually lasted a year and a half, which is surprising, but I got fired from that position and decided it would be good to go back to cooking because it's nice and easy. You know, I don't have that, don't have to get up so early, don't have to, everybody drinks in restaurants, you know, it's easy. So, started doing that. I think 2008, I had 12 W-2s. So I just would, get too drunk and not show up. So, all right, I'll just find another job. It's easy to get restaurant jobs. So, by the middle of 2008, or the end of 2008, I guess, I'd quit paying bills. I've been evicted from my last place, so I was living out of my truck. I also would occasionally spend weekends down in the housing projects doing some other substances. And I ended up getting busted down there one night for possession of cocaine. I could have gotten a first offender's plea where if I did 40 hours of community service and some other little hoops, it would have been expunged and not show up on my record. But I couldn't be bothered to do that stuff. So I can remember waking up on my buddy's couch and my phone ringing, seeing that it was my lawyer, realizing that it was court date and I hadn't done any of the stuff. I just got up, went to the fridge and got a beer, and then he lived right around the corner from the bar. I was waking up at noon or something, so I just went to the bar. I was on the run for about a year and a half, I guess, something like that. And in that time, you know, I had more jobs kind of come and gone. I actually scored a really good job. I was the head grill cook at the Hilton in Short Pump out in the West End. And good pay, you know, pretty prestigious cooking job. And I was drinking around the clock at this point. You know, I was, I couldn't, I always, you know, go to bed wasted, or, you know, if I remembered going to bed, I'd say, I'm not going to drink, and then I'd wake up and I have a terrible hangover. Say, I've got to have at least a shot or two just to get this feeling off me, and back to zero is what I'd say, and, you know, it would just turn into more and more. You know, the grill, the meat locker was right next to the beer locker, so, I mean, there's a little pass-through between the two, so I could say I'm getting my stuff ready for my shift and, you know, grab a couple beers and drink in the cooler, that sort of thing. So it's just, it's real easy. But, you know, I was on it was basically like a week where I was blacked out. I had called out of work, told my boss that I had norovirus, so knew that he didn't expect me to come in. But I was throwing up like I had norovirus, but I ended up it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, decided I needed a sandwich. I went to Wawa down from where I was, and I locked my keys in my car. Somehow my sandwich was in the car, but my keys were locked in there. And I had this piece of rebar in the back. It was a truck. Had a piece of rebar, and I was about to bust the window, and a cop turns on his lights right behind. And so I got busted for that previous charge. It took me in. I ended up doing 6 weeks in Richmond City Jail. And, you know, that was my wake-up call. That was my bottom. Finally. I ended up, you know, coming to the realization that, you know, not only were my stays in jail becoming more frequent, and, you know, I had had a DUI before, I kind of didn't talk about, just had one, surprisingly, because if I was driving, I was drinking. But when I got one DUI, I got 2 or 3 other drunken publics living in Richmond at that time. Before that other charge, so I was fed up. But, you know, not only was I, you know, my stays in jail getting longer and more serious, my binges were too. You know, I was, you know, to the point where I just couldn't not drink. I remember there being a point where I could, you know, not drink, and it was a long time ago, but, you know, it scared me. And I was put on the recovery tier, which is, it's great for me. I ended up going to my first AA meeting there. Like I said, my grandfather got sober in AA. My aunt, you know, his daughter also is sober in AA. I actually had a roommate with that first engineering firm that was in AA that didn't really tell me that he was an AA, but he would drop a lot of hints that I'd never got. And actually, the night before I got arrested, I had gone to pick up my W-2 from this place, and one of the managers tried to 12-step me when I was doing it. She asked me to sign that I had received my W-2, and my hand didn't work. I couldn't even sign my name. And she begged me to try and go to a meeting. I don't really remember what I said. I'm pretty sure it was no. But, so I'd had these experiences where I was asked to, and then kind of, like, the next day after that first meeting, I don't remember anything about it. I remember that it was led by the chaplain at the jail, and he did most of the talking. I talked to my mom. I finally told her where I was. You know, at this point, I might talk to my parents once every 3 weeks or something. You know, I'd just kind of gone off the face of the earth. And you know, she says that thing that cuts you super deep, but at least I know where you are now. I know you're safe. And I told her that I'd gone to the meeting, and she didn't really say too much about it, but I talked to her a couple weeks later, and she said, you know, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do when I got out, and she said, you know, you can come live with us if you promise to go to AA meetings. I didn't really have a choice. My house was my truck, and that was impounded. Didn't have any money to get that out, so and I didn't have anywhere to go. So, I did. I moved in with them, and you know, I've always been very hard-headed, and I like to say that I like to consider all my options, I guess. Didn't have any options but the one, but I did find this one meeting that was out by where they live. There's only one meeting in that area a week. It's Thursday nights, and it was four old white guys that sat around telling the same stories every week. But, you know, I didn't have anything in common with these guys, but what they were saying actually kind of made sense. It was interesting. There one guy's a sharecropper, one guy's a heavy machinery mechanic, and you know, I'm just like some dirty 29-year-old kid, and we actually can get each other and understand. I understood what they were talking about. It's pretty amazing. That kept me coming around, but it didn't really make me jump in. They weren't real big on the big book. Really, it was just an open discussion type thing. But they did kind of nudge me to consider other meetings. So it took me a while. It was about 2 months, maybe 3 months ever. That whole period from like the last year of my drinking to the first probably year of sobriety is still really fuzzy for me. I don't remember the timeline real clearly, but I know that the first other meeting that I went to, it was a beginner's meeting down on Monument Avenue. Meet Saturday mornings. I had my mom drop me off because I still wasn't able to drive. I don't remember if I had a license at that point. I don't think I did, but I ended up running into this girl who was a bartender at the bar where I used to drink all the time, and she had been sober about a year. And you know, of course, I'm trying to buddy up with her because I always thought she was hot too. But first thing she does is point me in the direction of this guy Lincoln, who ended up being my. She said, "You need to ask him to be your sponsor," and I said, "Okay." And it kind of worked out beautifully right then. I was just enveloped by AA. His brother was speaking at a meeting down in Gloucester that night, and after the meeting, we went and got coffee, and I met like four or five guys, and we talked for a couple hours, and then, you know, I met him later that day, and we drove down and heard Eric speak, and on the way, Eric actually had to pick up a guy. It's kind of one of those God moments. He said, "Hey, I got this call from somebody. This guy needs a ride to the meeting," and it was this guy Ben that used to sleep on the couch where I'd, one of the last houses I actually had. You know, one of my big drinking buddies. He didn't end up sticking around, but you know, that's just kind of cool. You know, immediately I was, you know, somebody else was brought into my life from the past that it just kind of made me think that, you know, I think I'm in the right place. So, you know, we started going through the steps. The first step was easy for me. You know, I of course told him that, you know, I had step one down. We don't even need to talk about that, but you know, we read through the big book, like he was taken through the big book, and you know, I saw myself a lot in all that stuff, and I didn't really fight the first step much. But then we got to the second step. Definitely fought that one. Like I said, had gone to Catholic school and had gotten into a lot of trouble at Catholic school for asking questions about Catholicism and that sort of thing, and blind faith and trans, whatever, the bread actually turns in. Yeah.
Transubstantiation.
Transubstantiation, where the blood, the wine actually turns into Jesus' blood, and the bread actually is Jesus' body. It's like, are you sure? So, yeah, and it kind of harbored some resentment towards God. And, you know, I really did think that God had abandoned me, even though there were all kinds of signs that he'd been taking care of me this whole time. I mean, I should have been dead tenfold. But, you know, I was hanging on. I'm hard at it, you know. I also, you know, used to go to church. We went to about the same time that my parents took me out of a public school and put me in that Catholic school, we started going to a Presbyterian church. And, you know, I did a lot of youth group stuff and had a lot of really good experiences there. And then when I was 13 or 14, I got caught trying to buy pot at one of the youth group things, and we didn't go back there anymore. So that was kind of the extent of my church life, besides having to go to Mass at school. But, you know, I had a lot of hang-ups with organized religion. But, you know, I'm going to read a little bit in here from We Agnostics real quick. You know, this paragraph, it says, "But as face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious." And, you know, that was me, absolutely. I can remember sitting in my sponsor's house, and we're reading this, and I was getting kind of agitated, and we got past that, and, you know, we get to this paragraph on 46. It says, "Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps." I could get behind that idea, you know. Like I said, I went to school for engineering. I've got a scientific mind. You know, there's laws in this world that, you know, we can't fight. You know, if you have a certain amount of weight on a foundation, it's going to have, you know, you've got this equation that will be able to calculate that. You know, how does that happen? You know, those are You know, and it talks about the electrons and the prosaic steel girder. You know, I can understand those ideas. And, you know, those laws had to come from somewhere. So that was my start with getting a relationship with God. So basically at that point just decided, I guess that's kind of the third step too, just to keep an open mind and not think about stuff too much. You know, that's always kind of been my Achilles heel, is overthinking things. I went through the third step and definitely drug my feet at the fourth step. I think I was 6 months sober or so when I finally had my list, and I mean, it was a complete mess, but I remember, you know, Lincoln, he was able to get down to, you know, I don't think I even did a fourth column. But, you know, I did do my best. I guess I did my best. But, I tried, and I was willing to listen to him when he gave suggestions on what's actually going on, and kind of take me through it how it's supposed to be. So, also did not do a very well. I also left a big thing off my list. I'll get to that in a minute. But I got to the sixth and seventh step, and I think I took a nap. I didn't do the. It definitely wasn't an hour. I think I sat down and read, and then I went to sleep. I don't know how, but you know, I was able to stay sober. But I'll get to that. I did do a very thorough eight step, and it seemed like as soon as I had that list prepared, people started appearing that I needed to make amends to. Another God moment. I made amends to my family first. It's a living amends. I did owe them a lot of money though, so we worked out some a payment plan for that, and owed a ton of money in general, because I hadn't been paying anything for like 3 years or something, basically. I'd pay off landlords and old roommates and things like that. I don't think I paid taxes in 2008, 2009, so there's a lot of that sort of thing. My sponsor helped me with that stuff too. And I remember that the roommate that I had that was dropping all the hints, I ended up running into him. I don't know if you guys remember Rebos, but that was, he never went to that meeting. I didn't go there that often, but it just happened that we were both there, and I was able to make amends to him, which was really cool. I did have one not real good amends situation. I ran into this guy that, it was one of those situations where he probably did me more wrong than I did him, but that's not for me to judge. So I still need to do my part and clean up my side of the street. And I ended up running into him in a gas station out by my parents' house. And we ended up almost getting into a fist fight in the middle of the parking lot. So I was not able to make that amends. But, you know, I have not seen him. I was still pretty, you know, at this point, too, I was still very angry and not real pleasant to be around. I got fired from my first three jobs in sobriety for being smarter than my bosses and being a smartass, basically, too. So, you know, that stuff lasted until basically I made a good amount of amends. And then, you know, there's 10, 11, and 12. That whole time I was picking up guys at the healing place and trying to be of service as much as I could, that without, you know, doing full-on sponsorship. I'd had a Outlaw Safecrackers was my home group because that was my sponsor's home group. So I had a position there. I ended up, I think I was GSR at that point. So I was doing a lot of service too. But I was still, you know, on edge and agitated a lot. And then about a year and a half into sobriety, I decided to go back to school. I went to culinary school. And at the same time, that job where I was trying to sign for my W-2 and couldn't, I made amends to that manager, and she ended up offering me a job back. And that turned into pretty quick promotions, actually. They had two locations at that point, and then they were opening one in Fredericksburg, and I was asked to go open the kitchen for them in Fredericksburg. So I was living up there half the week, in school the other half the week, and, you know, like a year and a half sober and still kind of tenuous. And my meetings just took a dive. I started going to, you know, I didn't like the meetings in Fredericksburg because they weren't, you know, what I was used to. And, things got bad quick. Started, you know, yelling at the servers like I used to. And it's almost like a sport for me trying to see if I could make the servers cry. You know, big, powerful man behind the grill, you know. So I ended up putting in my 2 weeks, and then the day before my 2 weeks was up, you know, I decided that I just couldn't do the traveling thing anymore. I needed to just focus on school and stay local so I could go to meetings. I ended up having an accident at work and deep frying my foot. So I don't know if that was God or not, but... so that laid me up. I spent 3 days at the burn unit at MCV, and I was kind of forced to get back in the middle of AA. I didn't have anything else to do, so people would come pick me up, take me to meetings. And it was about the time that I got honest with my sponsor too that I had left that thing off my fifth step. It's funny. This thing had had so much power over me, but I finally just blurted it out. He said, "You know what? I did something very similar, and you know, I also did this." And you know, we kind of joked about it. I mean, it's not anything that I'm like proud of now, but it doesn't have power over me, and I can actually share it to, you know, I have shared it to guys that I've taken through the fifth step as well, you know, just doesn't control me anymore. And that's where things really started to kind of change in my life as well. I ended up going all the way back through the steps with him and, touching up on some of those amends that, you know, and at that point I had kind of looked at my amends and how I had phrased things, and I've always kind of had a backhanded way of saying things, you know. So I kind of cleared some things up with my parents, around that time, you know, I was still staying with them, and my mom one night had been in my face screaming, "You're still the same selfish asshole that you've always been," you know, before I had kind of cleared that stuff up. And I thought I was an angel. You know, I thought I was doing the right thing. It's like, I'm not drinking, I was still just being a jerk. So, I was able to kind of clear those things up. You know, I'm sure if you ask my wife, she would tell you that I've still got a lot of those tendencies, but it's not as prevalent. I'm a very, very lucky man. I mean, I don't know how I ended up with the life I've got now. I ended up getting out of restaurant work decided to go into sales, which is amazing, because when I first came in, I couldn't even look you in the eye, much less get in front of somebody and talk. You know, I would shake and stutter and all kinds of things. Now, like, that's how I make a living. It's pretty amazing. There's no question in my mind that I've, you know, had a complete personality turnaround, you know, a spiritual awakening, you know. I ended up marrying a girl in AA. We had a, we've got a one-year-old son together. You know, I've got a good job, and it's, but it's not about the stuff that I've accumulated. You know, I'm actually happy with my life now. You know, I've never been able to say that. I definitely, it was hard when James was young, was newborn, you know, trying to make meetings. I had to switch my home group and, you know, try and figure out when to meet with sponsees and things like that, just because it's such a time commitment having a newborn. But, and, you know, things were getting a little tense around the house, but, you know, we've come through that now. My wife's also in grad school, so she's working full-time, school full-time, and trying to have a, and so, you know, there's a lot of moving parts and trying to balance AA life, too. It's been a challenge, but, you know, I think we've done pretty well with it. It's, pretty amazing. Kind of out of time, or no, I'm not out of time. I'm out of things to say. So I don't want to BS. I'll just pass.